I've been down roads from Churchill to L.A. Met kings of speed and stars along the way. They got stories that the cameras never show. Yeah, the truth behind the fame is what we know. From the saddle to the silver screen glow, fast lanes and punch lines on a late night show. You think you've seen it all, but you don't know the half till the curtain lifts and we all have a laugh. It's not just who they are, it's how they came to be. A little horsepower, a little mystery. It's Hollywood and horsepower, baby. Take a ride where the legends laugh and the engines never hide. From the track to the spotlight, stories unwind. Yeah, the truth's a little wild and one of a kind. Hollywood and horsepower, where the real ones show. Every twist and turn is a tale you didn't know. So pour a drink, sit back, enjoy the show. Where the fast and famous let it all go.
Welcome to the Hollywood and Horsepower Show. I'm your host, Mark Otto, and this is the story behind the story is what Hollywood is. We're brought to you today by Tony's Steak and Seafood in Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Bowling Green, and Lexington, Kentucky. We also support two charities on this program. We don't take a dime from either one. We do it because we believe in what they do. The first is Old Friends Equine, oldfriendsequine.org. It was founded by Michael and Diane Blowen, former entertainment writer for the Boston Globe and a good friend. He and his wife, Diane, have done just an amazing job of giving retired racehorses a place to call home and also giving people opportunity to see these horses up close and personal. So if you have a chance, take a look, oldfriendsequine.org. It is an amazing place. They would have tours every day. They welcome any private events. It's a great place to check out. The other one that we support is a group called No Fallen Heroes. Fellow naval aviator, friend of mine, Matt Wiz Buckley, a Top Gun pilot, Top Gun adversary instructor. His wife, Susie, started this program to help veterans readjust and hopefully, you know, avoid, you know, some of the veteran suicides. Matt and Susie have done an amazing job of helping countless veterans. Some of them you know really well, including the Lone Seal, Marcus Luttrell. And they continue to do this work, and we can't thank them enough. No Fallen Heroes. If you can't do a lot, do a little. Every dollar helps with both of these organizations. And they truthfully are probably two of the best-run charitable organizations that I've ever been involved with. We're joined today by a very special guest, someone I consider to be a friend, somebody that people will know the name, but I don't think they know everything about her. This is the Baffert behind the Baffert, Jill Baffert, Bob Baffert's wife. Jill, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me. I like that intro, that music. I feel like I should be sitting in a smoky bar or something with Bing Crosby here in Del Mar.
Cigar bar with a glass of something.
Yes.
So that was actually put together by our producer, Don Newsom. That's our theme song, and it's out on iTunes and Audible and all over the place. It's actually a download now. It's taken off.
It's so good.
So I really wanted, and I can't thank you enough for doing this. I mean, you and I have known each other going back to about probably 2014, 2015. I think it was actually before American Pharoah I met you. And
yeah, I feel like Game On Dude was in there. So that was before that.
Yeah. And you know, The interesting thing is, and I was going to get that. Game On Dude is definitely one thing that you and I share. We share a lot of things. Born the same year, born the same month. And Game On Dude was always my favorite horse. And I think I've told you this, but you know, for people listening, Game On Dude is a very, very famous horse that Bob and Jill Baffert trained and raced with their partners. And he was just a unique horse to me. I was working in California. This was kind of prior to me even getting involved in the horse industry. And I don't know why, because I never really went. I would go to Santa Anita and occasionally go to Del Mar just because I was in Southern California a lot. But I wasn't, you know, involved in the industry. It was more just for entertainment. Game On Dude always stood out to me because he was the name, and he was just such a phenomenal horse. And I remember several times watching him race, and he just seemed like it was effortless. You know, he didn't even look like he was, you know, breaking a sweat. The other horses are flat out running, and, you know, it just seemed like he glided around the track. So he always caught my eye. And then when I did get involved in the horse industry, because my background's always been sales and marketing, I was fortunate enough that somebody introduced me to Michael Blowen. We hit it off right off the bat. And I got involved, and I always tried to help with sponsorships and things with old friends, just like we still do today with this show. I remember when we got the call from you asking if there was a home for a little brown horse. You know, it's funny. I've worked around Hollywood. I've worked with the studios. I've worked with a lot of known people over the years. I've never really gotten starstruck. I think when I saw Game On Dude walk off the trailer, that was probably the first time that I actually felt starstruck. Because it was kind of like I had heard, you know, I had watched him. I had seen him. I had never seen him up that close. And it was just, I mean, it was like, this is a real celebrity. You know, and he was just such an amazing, he still is to this day, such a smart horse, kind, gentle. I'm sure you remember, I went through a divorce in 2015, 2016, and you know what it's like in tough days, you know, things seem hopeless. There was a lot of times I'd go out to the farm and stand by his paddock, and I swear he was like an old friend. He'd just come up and stand around with you and hang out.
Yeah, you got some horse therapy for free.
Horse therapy. And, you know, it's interesting.
The best therapy.
Touch point, my daughter was born the same year as him.
Oh,
and Grace, you've met Keith and Grace. And Grace, I actually have a picture in my office that I'm looking at right now when she was probably, she was pretty young. And it was when we got him an old friend. And she was, and I would not do this with her with many horses, but she was sitting on a fence post, and Game On Dude had his head in her lap right next to her.
Yeah, and that was him.
He was such a good guy. I mean, he's so, and I can only imagine what he was like for you guys in the barn. I mean, he was such a, he was almost human-like. He had such a personality, yeah. Still does.
Yeah, he was amazing. To your point, when he was on the racetrack, he was effortless. His only maybe Achilles heel was that he liked to run on the lead. So that can be detrimental to a horse if they don't get the easy lead or get a lead, which he didn't really get easy leads. He was just so fast that the other horses couldn't keep up with him.
The one that stood out to me was his Charlestown, one of his Charlestown races.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember he ran the entire, and I don't know why this stood out to me, but you can go back and look at the video. He ran the entire race with his ears forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually they kind of pin their ears back.
You know, he loved it. He loved being out there, and he would just run a hole in the wind. But in his stall, he was just a puppy dog. Oh, I loved him so much. I still love him, but obviously I don't get to see him like I did when he was here. But he was just so kind and gentle and unassuming. Yeah, he's definitely one of my all-time favorites.
Still that way. I don't know if I ever told you this story, but when it was another time that you and Bob were gracious enough to let Michael and I tag along with you, when American Pharoah was at the Belmont, and we came out there as guests, I was standing next to Joe Torre, which obviously you guys know Joe. I did not. I didn't know. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing, but I didn't really know who he was. And
oh, goodness. Okay.
Going, hey, Joe, so, oh, gosh, you know, we just love what you did. And I was kind of confused, and I think Michael Blown could tell. And Michael leans over to me, and he's like, "That's Joe Torre." And I still didn't register. And then he says, "He owned part of Game on Dude." Well, that was like, you could have told me that Paul McCartney was standing next to me at that point, because I was like, that actually caught my attention. So I literally turned to him, like, "Oh my God, you owned Game on Dude?" And of course, he's looking at me like, "Do we have security here?" But he, we start talking, and I said, "We have Game on Dude at this farm in Georgetown, Kentucky." And he immediately lit up. He's like, "You're kidding me." He said, I didn't know where he went. And he said, I would love to see him. So we trade cards, and, you know, we said goodbye. At that point, he took off. Michael and I took off. Michael, you know, Michael's always the voice of reason. Michael's like, "Look, just don't get too excited." He goes, "Some of these guys tell you they'll come. They don't come. But, you know, just..." And I said, "No, I think he's going to come." And like 2 weeks later, my phone rings. It's a New York number. And I answer it, and he says, "Mark, it's Joe." He said, "Is the invitation still good to come to Old Friends?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." And he said, "Could I come on Saturday and bring some friends?" And I said, "Absolutely." So he came down with a few friends. They were in Cincinnati for an All-Star game. And meanwhile, I went to Louisville Slugger and had a bat made that said "Game on Dude" with his earnings and his starts and wins, just like they do for baseball.
Cool.
Yeah, and then I got a bunch of baseball hats made with Game on Dude's, with Joe's silk, with their team's silk on it, and then Game on Dude's name on the back. So when Joe got there, he had asked me, "Since you have kids, I told you," and he had a couple of bats for my kids. And then I said, "Hey, I've got something for you." And I showed it to him. Oh my God, he was speechless. He literally held the bat and just stared at it. And he said, "This is going to my office." He said, "This is one of the coolest things I've ever got." And then he made the guys that were with him take their hats off and put the Game on Dude hats on. And
rightly so.
They stuck around for hours. We rode around the golf cart, fed the horses carrots. He just absolutely loved it. He was so, it was really fun. I mean, he was, and it was kind of funny because him and I were walking and kind of the group had wandered off and him and I were kind of strolling behind. And I said, "I got to be honest with you." I said, I didn't know who you were. And he said, "I kind of could tell." And I said, "I had to Google you."
You don't like baseball? Do you like baseball or no?
I do like baseball, but I had never really, and you know what's even worse? I was a huge Dodgers fan because I worked in L.A. So,
right.
But I didn't, he was kind of more Yankees at that time.
Yeah, he was.
So I didn't really, I just didn't, I knew the name, but it still didn't click just by looking at him. And, you know, to add insult to injury, you know, kind of funny. I've always been interested. I'm really interested in old Hollywood. I really like, but I don't like, like, I know celebrities if I'm involved with them or you know, athletes. But I never really was like a groupie. Like, I would follow them and know them from everything. Mm-hmm. And so Joe, I had just never crossed paths with him prior to that. In any type of work or doing any marketing or anything like that, because I never did a lot on the East Coast. It was more West Coast. So it was just kind of funny. And one of the questions I had for him, which you probably know, is I said, "I just have a question. I mean, how'd you get into horse racing?" And he kind of chuckled and he says, "You know, it's a funny story." He said, "When I was in a farm team in Louisville," he said, "I didn't have much money." And he said, "You know, good entertainment, and you could get kind of a low-cost lunch was to go to Churchill, get a couple of hot dogs and a beer, and play the ponies, and you had a chance to turn, you know, $10 into 50 or something." And he said, "That was kind of how I got hooked on it." And he said, "Then when I did start making money, we purchased a horse, and it did well, and then, you know, went on and did other ones." So it was really nice, but it was, again, another touch point with Game on Dude. And it is funny how some of these horses have so many, they cross paths so many times in your life with different things. And Game on Dude is definitely one of those horses. Like, I had seen him before I was ever involved in horse racing, never dreamt I'd even stand close to him. And then you go from that to you're feeding him Grape Jolly Ranchers at the farm, you know, and he's your best friend. So it was a kind of a full circle moment for me. But I'd really like to talk about is I'd like to kind of go back, because I feel like, obviously, everybody knows you for today. And obviously, everybody knows you for, you know, your husband Bob's career. And I love Bob to death, but today is about you. So, I mean, you grew up in Centerville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You know, tell us a little bit about growing up. I mean, I know you're at a fairly early age, you really wanted to be like in TV, like an anchor in news. What was mm-hmm. it that kind of inspired you? Like, what was it? How did you start that path?
I don't think there was any, like, precipitous moment, but I did grow up in a small town in Tennessee. Yep. And I just always liked the news. I remember I would be playing in the afternoons. I would have to run inside and watch Peter Jennings' World News Tonight. So I don't know. I just always had, I don't know, an affinity for it, I guess. And then I went to school, and where I went to Middle Tennessee State, and they had, probably still have, a good radio TV. It was a new, because they're right there in that Nashville market with all the country music and stuff, so they have a lot of that.
I have a friend that went to Middle Tennessee. Yeah, yeah, a very good friend that went there.
So, yeah, that's what I did, and then I got a job in Western Kentucky in Hopkinsville. I think the TV station now was owned by the local newspaper, but I think it's gone away now. And then from there, I went to Louisville, and I was there for, I think, about 4 years, which is where I met Bob.
And you were the anchor there, right?
I did the morning show. I started out doing the reporting during the week and doing the weekend mornings, and then I moved to the weekends. I mean, I'm sorry, to the morning show during the week, which, you know, that's a tough racket. You know, you're up at 2 or 2:30, and it's a different lifestyle for sure.
Like, the universe was...
I don't miss that part.
I was going to say, it's like the universe was grooming you for horse training at an early age. That's
I know.
Up at 2 or 2:30.
The only people that get up before horse trainers, I think.
So, when you... I'm just curious, prior to going to, you know, Kentucky, did you have interest? I know you had been involved in beauty contests and different things. You worked as a waitress. Did you have interest in horses growing up as a kid?
No, not at all.
At all.
They're just like a backyard horse or something, you know. I didn't have any. I do remember watching the Kentucky Derby, of course. I mean, that was, I guess everybody remembers that. But yeah, I really didn't have any connection. Or we had a horse at one time. My dad had a horse, and I think my little sister had a pony. But yeah, it was never kind of in my wheelhouse.
So you get to Louisville, and you know, you're working the morning show. How was it that you first crossed paths with horse racing? Did you, obviously, with Churchill being right there, I'm sure that was a story that you covered mm-hmm. quite a bit, different times of the year.
Oh, yeah. Well, at Derby time, the whole town is Derby. It's sure. like Derby and basketball, you know, like U of L basketball. But yeah, at that time, and I think it still goes on, 2 weeks prior to the Derby, they would have what they call the Derby Festival, which is 2 weeks yeah. of events and just leading up to the Derby. And so we covered that, you know, that was just wall to wall. That was just Derby coverage. And then we did our morning show live from the backside of Churchill Downs. And that was, at that time, there were so many people on the backside. It was just it was a lot of fun. You know, I think they managed a little more tightly now, which rightly so. But
to put it in context for our listeners, this is like 1997, 98, probably?
Yeah, 97 was my first Derby. Yeah, that was 97. That I covered, and then actually.
Interesting, because that was a big year for Bob, too.
Yeah, he won his first Derby with Silver Charm, who was also at Old Friends.
And then the next year, Real Quiet.
Real Quiet, yes. Yeah,
he, you know, it's, so did you meet him the first Derby?
No, I like met him in 1998.
Okay, you, in an interview, yeah. I'm assuming?
Yes.
97, you do your first Derby, and yes. then you're going, you know, you cover, I'm assuming you cover from festival right through the Derby. Would you guys mm-hmm. be there for coverage, like Derby Day even, do your show there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We would start early that, you know, the morning show as usual, and then the evening anchors would take over. They went well into the afternoon, and then when they turned, I think at the time, I think ABC covered it at the time.
Okay.
So then, you know, obviously they couldn't show the racing part of it, but yeah, it was a big deal. Still is.
Yeah, and I mean, for people that don't know, you know, we're joined by Jill Baffert, Bob Baffert's wife, and we're talking about her career in reporting and being the anchor in Louisville. You know, for people that don't know, when you're working the Derby, either with media or marketing or branding or anything like that, it's a long day. I mean, it starts really early and ends.
It's a long day for when you're a trainer, you know.
Oh, that goes without saying. I don't think anybody
knows a long day
they go through.
Yeah.
Sure, there's no sleep the night before that for somebody
it's
like
difficult.
Bob. That's got to be stressful.
Yeah. It's a little stressful, yeah.
So it's 1998. You met Bob. Was there like an immediate connection, or was it just another interview at that point?
I mean, I would say so. Bob is very charismatic, and
absolutely,
yeah. So I would say so.
Yeah, and I would agree. I don't think most people know. I mean, people that haven't had the opportunity to meet him. He's really very approachable. Very, you can't help but like him. You know what I mean? He's just personable, mm-hmm. and, you know. So I could see that, and he's obviously very smart. I have to tell you something that really stood out for me with him. Just, you know, in the times when I got to meet you guys and kind of tagging along and stuff. And I'm sure this may be something that a lot of trainers do, or he had done his whole career. It really stood out to me how much he kind of reflected back on previous races and changed the way he did things based on that. Like, he would make comments about Silver Charm and War Emblem, and it was really interesting to me. And I don't know why that didn't seem obvious, but it was... I guess just to show people that there's a lot that goes into this, I think, a lot more than most people see. You know,
and Bob's
toughest careers. You have an athlete that can't talk to you, and you know, trying to figure them out. And sometimes what's a relatively short period of time. You know, sometimes I'm sure you guys don't have that horse for a long time before you do the first races.
Well, Bob is definitely a student of the game, and you know, he goes back and watches races, whether it's his races or someone else's horse, but I think his experience and having been in those big races and won them is part of why he continues to be so successful, because he can call on that experience. And And, you know, there's probably not a situation that he hasn't encountered along the way. And he has a great team of people around him who've worked for him for 3 decades.
Yeah.
And,
definitely.
Yeah. So, and there's also an art to training. It's not like you and I could train a racehorse and we could be successful to some level and, you know, win races, but it's finesse. It's gut instinct, I feel. And, like I said, the previous experience. So it's not, you know, there's not really a formula for it. Obviously there's a formula for, you know, feeding your horses and keeping them healthy in that regard. But, and Bob is not afraid to back off on a horse, or he will see, you know, this horse needs a little out of this work this time. He didn't get as much out. And a lot of trainers obviously can see that. But, yeah, I think his experience in those big races is invaluable to him and a real tool in his toolbox.
I would agree with that. And I would even go one step further and I'm not trying to focus on Bob's career, but I will touch mm-hmm. on it. That, you know, one thing that really stood out, a couple things that stood out to me, and I keep in mind, I come from outside horse racing, kind of like you did. So I think you look at it different when you didn't grow up in it. One of the things that really stood out just as an observer was how much he reflected, like I said. The other thing was the team. Everybody had been with him for a long, long time, from Jimmy and Dana to George and some of the grooms. They'd just been there forever. And that really speaks volumes. I mean, that says a lot about somebody. And then the other thing that really stood out to me was the calmness in the barn. You know, from somebody that wanders, you know, I kind of wander all over the backside because I would be involved in different, you know, promotions or branding or sponsorships. And whenever you'd be in your barn, Bob's barn, it just seemed like it was quiet, calm. And you walk by other barns and you hear people screaming and yelling and the horses acting up. And there's just something about it. In fact, someplace, I'd have to dig this up. I should dig it up and send it to you. It was Belmont, the morning of Belmont for American Pharoah, and Michael and I were at the barn. And one of the things that stood out to me, and I just kind of snapped a picture, was that Bob was standing kind of at the end of the shed row, arms crossed like he always has, kind of looking outside, I'm sure deep in thought, thinking about what he's up to. But it amazed me that all the horses were standing there about as calm as he was. It was just he set the tone and they followed it.
Yeah. He wouldn't tolerate a lot of that, I don't think. It's very important, that environment for the horses to be calm, because they are such sentient animals and they're so, you know, they're flight animals. So they're going to pick up on any kind of tension or chaos or anything like that. So Bob really has, he has a pretty firm rule that he doesn't allow a lot of people to the barn on race day, especially big race days, because he wants to keep the horses quiet and he wants to keep them resting and in their routine. So, I've honestly not been in a lot of other barns, so I don't know, you know, that.
And I'm not bad-mouthing anybody.
What the environment is.
It was an observation that I agree with you 1,000%, but I feel like it isn't that common. You know, from floating around the backside going barn to barn, I don't see that level of kind of calm. You know what I mean? You might see it after the training's done in the morning, like when things settle. But, I mean, even during the heyday, like, you know, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, it's still pretty calm there. You know, I mean, there's not chaos.
I agree with that. I can't ever remember really a moment of chaos.
And when you look at people's personalities, I mean, Jimmy's another one that's just like, just consummate professional.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he really is. Brilliant horseman. I mean, I don't think most people, you know, even, I don't think people give him the credit near what he deserves. I mean, he's so good with them, and him and Bob are such a good combination. I mean, you can just tell that they really work well together.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, his wife, Dana, who you mentioned earlier, she's retired now, but she actually worked for Bob before Jimmy as his exercise rider, one of his exercise riders. But she worked all the big horses. I mean, she was just, Bob had just magic on a horse. She had the really light hands and could just get so much run out of them without even really asking. They just, she had a tremendous rapport with the horses. And unfortunately, she retired, but they have a grandchild now, a grandson, and, you know, life goes on, so.
Do you still see her? She still come around the barn quite a bit?
Yeah. She comes around, and, you know, it's all, you know, being together that long, you know, it's like a family, really.
Oh, yes.
You have to think of it that way, because you're with them so much and you've spent such a big part of your life with them, you know? So, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting. because I do think that this industry is one where you develop, you know, deep friendships. And I, like I was saying earlier, I've never been one that was, like, starstruck, for lack of better words. Obviously, I knew of Bob, and I was very, you know, curious because I knew he was very successful at it, and I would watch what he did. But it wasn't, you know, it really wasn't until I was involved with old friends that I kind of got the opportunity to meet him. And, you know, it was there that you kind of realized, and I've always said this, you know, I really don't care what somebody does. I don't care if they're Alec Baldwin or the guy that rakes the hallway in the barn. I judge people based on how they act and how they treat me. Bob is one of those people, and you're the same way. It's like you make people feel comfortable immediately. It's like you've known these people for their whole life. You know, you feel like you truly do, and I'm sure you've heard this from other people. It's like you truly feel like you guys are friends, even though we don't see each other that often, because you put that level of comfort. You know, you can just stand there and talk to you guys like it's very comfortable. That's something that's kind of unique to our sport too, I think, is that it's very accessible and you do get the opportunity to meet people and get to know them as people. And I will tell you, and I want to point this out for our listeners, you know, we're joined by Jill Baffert, Bob Baffert's wife, and we're talking about her career, but we're also zigzagging a little bit into Bob's. And one thing I will say, and this is unsolicited, and I'm not going to go deep into this because I don't want to, you know, make anybody uncomfortable, especially Bob, but I will say this, and I know he doesn't like compliments. I have always looked at both of you as, like, some of the top horsemen in the industry. And I will tell you why I say that. I grew up on a beef farm. I grew up around horses. I know enough about the animal to recognize, you know, things. And Michael Blown and I have talked about this. If you really want to understand somebody's ability as a horseman, look at their horses when they retire. That will tell you everything you need to know about that person. And when you look at Silver Charm, Game On Dude, you know, going back to War Emblem, you know, Dan the Bluegrass Man, I mean, it's amazing how healthy they look. Look at Game On Dude. He looks half his age. Silver Charm.
He still looks amazing. I know. I can't believe that old man. He looks so good. I have to say, I'm not a horseman at all, a horsewoman, whatever you would say, but Bob says I have no cow in me, so because he considers himself a cowboy, I think. But I love the horses. I don't, you know, I wouldn't consider myself an expert in any form or fashion, but I do love them and feel just eternally grateful that every day I get to be around them.
And it is, but I mean, I point that out because I don't think people realize how it's a tough job. It really is. And I mean, I can point out a few things with, you know, over the career that people may or may not know. Game On Dude, the horse we've been mentioning several times, he was not a natural racehorse. Bob told me that, like, when he first started working with him, he was a handful. And they were not sure that he was going to make it to the track. And it was a lot of, you know, decisions that had to be made, including gelding him, that changed his behavior. And it's funny because I remember asking him one time, like, how do you know? And, you know, because that's another thing you were pointing out earlier, that's like there's like this talent or, you know, to horse racing. Like, you and I could be trainers and we might see some level of success, but there is definitely an art to it. One of the pieces of that I think stands out is the eye of certain trainers. Wayne Lucas had it, you know, down through history, several other guys have had it. Bob definitely has it, where they can look at a yearling and kind of say, that horse has something. There's something there. There's something in the way he walks. There's something in the way his back is. Something stands out. I mean, I always think about that. I mean, everybody looks at the finished product and they think, well, you know, it's just a great horse. But you have to remember, at one point, these were a bunch of little yearlings walking around a paddock, and somebody had to decide, okay, we're going to take these three and send them to Bob and see what we can do with them. And that, to me...
I would say Bob, for the most part, you know, he picks out, I would say, I don't know, 60 or 70% of the horses that he trains. So to me, as great of a trainer as he is, I think his real talent lies what you just said is finding young horses. And it's something I feel is innate with him.
Yeah, definitely. And that's going way back. I mean, you know, for people who don't know, he started out as a jockey and then went to training quarter horses. And then my understanding is it was actually one of his clients that wanted to get into thoroughbreds. And that was kind of how he got into thoroughbreds.
Yeah. Mike Pegram, his longest, well, one of his best friends, but you know, he was a client with him in quarter horses, and he had tremendous success in quarter horse racing as well. But then Mike wanted to get his feet wet in thoroughbred racing, and so they bought some thoroughbreds, and here we are.
So it's impressive that going back, you know, it's funny that people obviously remember him for the two Triple Crowns and the Kentucky Derby records and all that, but I mean, going back, he had a gift for picking horses early on that proved to be successful. And, I mean, even beyond the Triple Crown races, I mean, Breeders' Cup races, you know, going back to the Hollywood Gold Cup and Santa Anita, and, you know, there's so many, the Pacific Classic, that he is just, you know, the Haskell, that he's just dominated. And it is interesting to me. I agree with you. That to me, is a real skill. And you see that down through history, you know, with certain trainers that just seem to have an eye that would look at a yearling and say, yeah, there's something there. And I certainly wouldn't. I mean, when I look at them, they all look
They're all pretty.
Yeah,
exactly. They're all beautiful.
But I will say, you know, to my point, it's like that's something that always stood out to me, because the other side of that coin is, and Michael Bowen can confirm this, we've seen the horses at Old Friends that, you know, take 45 minutes to get off the truck. So, you know, it definitely, to me, says a lot about the trainer that when you see a horse that's 28, 29 years old, and they, you know, 19 years old, that are, you know, amazing health, they walk well, they have very little leg issues, that screams that they've been taken care of. And to me, that really stands out. And it really stands out that it's across multiple bloodlines, multiple ages. I really think that's a testament to how good of a horseman Bob and Jimmy are, because they put some of these horses in some of the toughest races in the world, and then they still retire sound. And that's a big deal.
Yes, I agree. And also, Old Friends, and there are other retirement facilities, but they do such a good job. They really have it down. They understand the process and how to keep the horses healthy and thriving and happy. And so I think it's a great team.
And it is a group effort. There's no question. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, as you said, there's a lot of organizations that do a great job. TAA does a great job. But I really, you know, I have to give Michael Bowen credit, him and Diane, because he really built an organization, not just on his own. He reached out to, you know, veterinarians and universities and owners and trainers. And he really built, like, this community that helped create what Old Friends is today.
Yeah, he was the OG. There were definitely retirement facilities, but he made it cool. And he didn't take no for an answer. And that's the thing about Michael. You can't offend him. So he was able to build this amazing farm, and if anybody hasn't, nobody's been there, it's really worth going to. You see, to his point, yeah, he says, like, I walk out every day in my backyard, and I have, you know, Michael Jordan and all the, he has some of the top athletes in horse racing, and very rarely would you ever get to interact that way, no, and certainly not, you know, be able to feed them carrots. So,
and I felt really, the same way. He has always welcomed me, and I've always had, you know, backstage access, for lack of better words. Mm-hmm. And it is funny because his favorite horse in the world was Silver Charm.
Oh, he loves that horse.
Yeah, my favorite horse in the world was Game On Dude. And one sits on one side of the driveway, one sits on the other. Mm-hmm. And him and I have talked about that. It's like, who would have thought? You know, it's interesting. Michael and I have a lot of touch points because we both worked in Hollywood. We both had been around that industry. And we both had kind of followed horse racing from the outside at first. He obviously got a lot more involved than I did. But I've served on the board at Old Friends and some other organizations as well, like you have. And it's interesting that, like he said, the first time he saw Silver Charm race, you know, he never thought he'd ever, you know, even be close to this horse. And then it ends up being in his backyard and he feeds him carrots every day. You know, I felt the same way about Game On Dude. It was almost surreal that these, and it is kind of funny because I think that's one another thing that he and I share. He doesn't get very starstruck. You know, if Alec Baldwin pulled in the driveway today and got out of the car, it's like he'd shake hands and he's a nice guy. But, you know, when Silver Charm walked off the truck, I think it took everybody's breath away. You know what I mean? It was just like, it was seeing Elvis walk in the room. And It is funny how that has that effect on you, which I guess is probably another thing that's unique to this industry. But it is, you know, it's just funny how they have so many things. Another thing that Old Friends does that I really have always been impressed, kind of standing back observing, it has helped. I will say, I believe Old Friends has helped people as much as it has helped the horses. And what I mean by that is they have a plethora of volunteers, all walks of life. A lot of people come there that, you know, they've been through some challenging things themselves, and the horses kind of offer a healing, for lack of better words. And the other thing they get with all the tours, and this is another thing that's always stood out to me, is they'll get, you know, some handicapped or special needs people that come and take a tour. It always amazes me how the horses can sense that, and they're extremely gentle and easier than even normal with those people. I mean, there's horses around there that, for example, don't like anybody to touch their ears. And I've stood there and watched, like, a special needs person touch their ears and pet them, and they just let them do it. It's almost like they can sense that this person needs a little bit extra, and they're extremely fast. It's just something that stood out to me. Again, coming from the outside, I think you, as more of an observer, I've kind of, things like that stand out, and it's really been impressive.
They're really just amazing animals.
Very smart.
They are. Mm-hmm.
Very smart.
Yeah. Intuitive. And
it is funny, too, how they are certain ones, just like people, all different personalities, all different attitudes. You know, you've got everything from Game On. I mean, back to talking about some of your horses, I mean, you got everything from Game On Dude, who's like the family dog, to War Emblem, who didn't want anybody to even make eye contact with him.
No, he may have been the meanest horse I've ever seen.
And, you know, now what's interesting is, and Bob had said that too. I remember, you know, he made that comment when he was first going to bring him back.
But I loved him, and we had a relationship. I mean, he loved mints and stuff, but I would never turn my back on him.
And you know what's funny? He did mellow after he'd been there a little while.
Yeah.
Like, he got where you could, and it's interesting to me how that's another thing that they figure out pretty quickly. And it's something Michael said that always impressed me. Michael's like, you know, we need to let a horse be a horse. You know, we don't tell them what to do. We let them tell us what they want to do. And he said it time and time again that it's amazing how many times you do that and, you know, their attitude changes. They become much more interactive, much more, you know, engaging and not near what their reputation was. Because they've had several horses there that people kind of warned them, like, you know, be careful, you know, he could be kind of aggressive. And over time, they turn out to be, you know, just fine, no issues. And Michael's always equated that to, you know, it's the first time in their lives where they haven't been, you know, pushed to do something. You know, some horses roll with it. They don't care. But then some of them, they just, you know, were on moves like that. They said that was kind of what ended his breeding, is he just refused to do it. And, you know, he just had a mind of his own. And then you have other horses you can lead around with a piece of dental floss. So it's just kind of funny how their personalities are all different. Yeah. So, you know, you and Bob, you know, meet in 98, get married, you know, a few years after that. You know, how was the transition? You know, that was a big change for you. You go from an anchor in Louisville to living in California, and I'm assuming on the road quite a bit.
Yes, I didn't, when I moved to California, I did some work. There's was a horse racing channel that's kind of on its way out, but called TVG, and I worked for them a few times, still, you know, trying to stay in the industry somewhat, but the traveling was just would prohibit that, really. I moved to California, and, you know, California is not hard to like. I mean, there are some things about California that are hard to like, but the weather's not one of them. And his home base was here for many, many years. He is now branching out somewhat to Louisville, but he maintains a barn here. Yeah, so it was, you know, it was a bit of a culture shock from a small town girl in California. But, you know, I had lived other places too, so I adapted pretty nicely, I would say.
How was the transition being that far away from family? Was that tough, were you able to get back?
Yeah, I mean, you'll miss your family, but
sure,
they'll always come out here once or twice a year, and then I'll go back. It's easier for me now to go back.
Your family still lives in Centerville, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, they're still there.
Yeah, you know, you guys have continued to grow and evolve, you know, as trainer, husband, and wife. You've been involved in a lot of boards and aftercare and a lot of things that I think probably people don't realize as well. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think people realize sometimes how much you're involved in those projects. I know you've been very involved with old friends, served on the board. I think you're still on the board, aren't you?
I am off the board currently. I'm off the board currently. We're in the process of moving and buying a house in Kentucky, and I just felt like maybe I would take a break for a minute, but definitely love what they do and will always be involved in some capacity.
So you mentioned Kentucky. Are you guys going to move back to Louisville, or is that just for when you're there with the horses?
Yeah, we'll be back and forth. He'll keep the barn here, and then we'll have a barn back east. I think California is a little tough right now. I'm not sure the direction it's going to go. So he felt like he probably, and it, you know, racing is just so big in Kentucky and the back east. You have more options here. You're a bit on an island there. If you have horses that maybe have the same conditions, you can ship one to one track and another to another track, and it's an easy ship. Whereas here, you know, they're FedExing the horse. They use FedEx to ship the horses, and it's not as it takes a lot more planning to do that, and it's not as simple or quick as it used to be when they had a horse plant, a dedicated horse plant.
With Kentucky. Plus, I think the other thing that a lot of people may not realize is you guys are very involved in breeding in stallion side of it as well. So that's probably a lot Kentucky based also, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a couple of brood mares, you know, sometimes more than others, but the sales are back there, and really the heart of racing is and always has been back there, but it just seems now more than ever that's the case.
Sure. So do you think you guys will keep a house in California, or will Louisville kind of home eventually?
Yeah. We'll stay here too.
Because now, so your youngest son, Bodie, he's probably off to college right now, right?
Right. He's going to be a senior.
Oh, wow.
So, I know. You're getting old, Mark.
I know. It's hard to believe. Well, my youngest, Gracie, remember little Grace, she's going into her sophomore year in college.
Oh, that's amazing.
Graduated college and bought his first house.
Oh, my gosh. That's unusual these days. Gosh.
Yeah. So,
part of these kids, I don't envy them.
And, you know, it's funny because I actually have a picture of Bob with Keith and Grace when they were probably like, you know, Grace must have been like 7. Keith was probably 11 or 12. And so that'll give you an idea how long it goes back. I mean, they've been around it since they were little. They kind of grew up with it. So it was kind of different for them.
Yeah.
No, that's really great. So what's next for you? You obviously are, you know, setting things up. You guys are on your way to Del Mar now, I'm sure.
Yeah, Del Mar started, and then, I guess just this transition back to Louisville and get that, you know, all sorted. And it will be different living in two places. And, you know, Bob's kind of not starting over, but just, you know, he's establishing a presence there. So that's going to require quite a bit of energy and time. So, we'll just be back and forth. And
now, will Jimmy
horse racing? The thing about horse racing is, you know, it doesn't stop. So it's like Groundhog Day every day, just a different venue, maybe. So not too much, I think, is going to change.
And will Jimmy go back and forth also? Is he going to kind of stay with California?
No, he's going to stay in California and run this barn here. And then Bob also has a third barn at in Southern California that the babies come into or the layups go. So, he's got three barns right now.
Now, does he do anything with quarter horses anymore?
No.
Or is he not at all.
No, okay. He's been out of that for ever since he transitioned to the thoroughbreds.
I thought so. I didn't know if he dabbled at all, because I knew he always liked them. I know he's had several of them for, like, track ponies and things, and I didn't know if he still, you know, entertained it at all, or if it was 100% thoroughbreds. But
yes.
Well, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I hope people get a little bit of a taste for your career. I mean, I've always been impressed by you and equally impressed by Bob, but, you know, you guys are definitely amazing people first and amazing horsemen after that. So I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you, appreciate the friendship, and, you know, give our best.
I feel the same way, yeah.
This has been Jill Baffert joining us today with Hollywood and Horsepower. We are brought to you today by Tony's Steak and Seafood in Indiana, Cincinnati, Lexington, and Bowling Green, Kentucky. Tony always says there's room at his table for one more. I always say dining at Tony's is an experience, not just dinner. You owe it to yourself. Take a look at oldfriendsequine.org. We've talked about them a little bit on today's episode, and definitely an organization that's very well run, and, you know, they do great work. No Fallen Heroes is another one, helps people. You know, we're losing way too many veterans to suicide, and No Fallen Heroes is one of the best organizations that I've come across that helps people transition. So, Jill, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. This has been Hollywood and Horsepower, and we will see you guys again next week.
So stay a while. You're in the driver's seat where the road and the rhythm finally meet.
Stick around. You never know who's next. And trust me, they got a story worth hearing.